A flash of light beams over a planet's horizon before pulling back quickly into the vast galaxy, revealing a constellation in the form of a lion rampant. A bright sun shines through misty white clouds that then dissipate. The outer edges of the image fade to black, leaving concentrated rays of sunlight against a blue sky in the center. Lionsgate. The silver block letters CBS fly onto a black background. Light glints off the S as more letters slide out beside it. CBS Films. Orbs of colorful light shimmer and swirl, dancing in the air, then combine and glide up and down like paintbrush strokes, leaving an irregular zigzag. Screen Australia. Three horizontal blocks and a curved segment slide together, simultaneously forming both a stylized E and P. Eclipse Pictures. Red text appears over a black background, inspired by actual events. Framed by ornate Victorian filigree, a crimson title appears. Winchester. A nighttime view from above shows a sprawling mansion with sections extending randomly in every direction. In a courtyard of the rambling complex, carpenters work by lantern light. Text appears, 1906, San Jose, California. Inside the dark building, a stained glass window bears the words, "These same thoughts people this little world." Another window reads, "Wide unclasp the tables of their thoughts." As a worker toils outside, within the house behind him, a figure wearing a black veil moves slowly past a series of windows while clutching a glowing oil lamp. Inside, shadows fill a dark, empty hallway divided by a lattice archway. Three candles burn at the top of a staircase. Around the side of another staircase, a polished wooden door is visible in the dim light. Inside the bedroom beyond the closed door, an auburn-haired woman and a young red-headed boy share a bed. The candle beside the sleeping boy flickers, then goes out. He opens his eyes and peers anxiously around the dark room. The boy sits up on the mattress, moonlight streaming over him through the sheer window curtains hanging just behind at the head of the bed. He stares nervously toward the now open bedroom door. Outside, a bell swings in the mansion's bell tower. In the bedroom, the auburn-haired woman stirs, the mattress now empty beside her. She bolts upright and scoots off the bed. The woman, holding up an oil lamp, climbs down a staircase. The faint glow from the lamp's glass chimney illuminates her white nightgown as she steps around a corner and peers down a hallway. Squinting into the darkness, her brow furrows.
Henry.
The boy stands unmoving at the end of the hall, a burlap firewood sack over his head. He turns and pads off down another hallway.
Henry.
She follows, her eyes narrowing.
Henry.
Rounding a corner, she catches sight of the boy again. He stands a few steps up, motionless on a staircase landing, facing more stairs that rise up and disappear to the left.
Henry.
The woman steps warily closer, climbing the few steps up to the landing.
Darling, what is it? What are you doing?
She sets down her lamp and reaches for the boy's shoulder. Eyes wide, she grasps the bottom of the sack covering his head. She slowly slides the bag up off his face. The boy's eyes are milky white. He blinks and they return to normal. Then he turns and points up the stairs in front of him.
He's coming for us.
She follows his gaze, leaning to see up to the top of the stairs. It's a dead end. The staircase leads nowhere, the last step just under the beams of a ceiling. They both stare up at the old wooden boards. Text appears, San Francisco, California. On a street filled with row houses, stylishly dressed pedestrians pass by a gate in a box hedge leading up to an ornate front door. Inside, a record spins below a phonograph needle.
I couldn't move. I started shaking. I was getting dizzy.
A hand dips a glass straw into a laudanum bottle.
I was sure everyone in the room wanted to kill me.
A brunette slides the straw into her mouth and takes her finger off the end, releasing the liquid. She sags backward. A bearded man lying on the floor turns his head.
I've never been so scared.
He stares at a painting of a buck. Blood runs down the canvas. He blinks and the painting returns to normal. The man turns away from the artwork, fondling a bullet in one hand.
Pointless in the end, though, fear, isn't it?
That's your best advice, Doc?
He rolls over and pulls himself up from the floor. Behind him are two more women, one lounging with a bottle at her side, another seen from behind, dancing topless.
What do you think controls you?
The doctor leans into the brunette.
Hey, your body or your mind?
Your money controls me, sugar.
She taps him with a glass pipette.
Ah, well, there you go.
Okay. I think my body and mind control each other.
Well, let's find out.
He holds up a $2 bill.
Is this real?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
The mind is incredibly creative.
He folds it twice, lengthwise.
Can make us see situations that appear completely real.
He balances it between index fingers.
They are, in fact, nothing more than illusions, perceptions.
He slides one finger away.
Of truth.
The bill sticks out, cantilevered from his one finger.
Sometimes we all need a little help to see the difference between reality and illusion. And that's about taking control. About not letting fear control you.
He hands her the bill.
Because fear in the end only exists in your mind.
Later, he strides to his front door, followed by the three women.
All right, sorry, say goodnight.
A mustached man in a bowler hat stands outside.
I'm looking for Dr. Price.
Merci beaucoup.
Price kisses the women goodbye.
I'm Arthur Gates, Chief Legal Officer of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company.
Really?
See you next week, sugar.
You're a hard man to reach, Dr. Price.
Mm-hmm. Good night, Nancy.
Good night.
Good night.
The brunette strides off after the other two.
Come on, sabbatical. Good night.
He waves, then turns to Gates.
What do you want? A prescription?
I've come to offer you employment.
Moments later.
Whiskey?
No, thank you. Are you familiar with Sarah Winchester, Dr. Price? Yeah, Mrs. Winchester's husband, William, was the majority shareholder of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company.
Gates passes a folio.
25 years ago, William passed, leaving Mrs. Winchester a rather large inheritance and 51% of the company. Mrs. Winchester also lost her only child, Annie.
Price inspects photos.
It said in her grief, she turned to a medium, spiritualist of some sort. The medium may have taken advantage of her mental state.
It's not uncommon after a tragedy.
I can assure you, Sarah Winchester is anything but common.
A clipping shows the mansion.
After her spiritual encounter, she moved across the country to San Jose, where she purchased what was... then an 8-room house.
So maybe it's in the garden room.
She spent the last 20 years expanding it.
They moved to a neglected solarium.
What stands now is a gargantuan 7-storied structure with no apparent rhyme or reason. No master plan. Each maze of halls more confusing than the next. A house under never-ending construction, built on the orders of a grieving widow whose mind is as chaotic as the house itself. Over the years, she's become more and more reclusive. Last month, the board of directors enacted its right to assess Mrs. Winchester's state of mind to determine if she's fit to control the company.
You want to take it away from her?
We're worried about her sanity, Dr. Price. We need a professional.
Any kind of diagnosis from such a long distance would be impossible.
Well, Mrs. Winchester's agreed to let you stay at the residence, an offer that is exceedingly rare.
Price gazes at the mustached man.
No more impatient for long distance. This is not something ordinary.
Name the amount.
It doesn't really work like that.
How much do you owe? Mortgage. Hospital expenses.
Gates looks the other man over.
Medicine.
$300.
We'll pay $600. For the appropriate assessment.
Price squints at the man. Later, a carriage pulled by two white horses rolls along a country road. Inside, Dr. Price takes a swig from a flask. He peers forward, smiling to himself, and lifts a catalog up from where it rests on his luggage. The cover reads, Winchester Repeating Arms Company. He flips open the pamphlet, turning past close-up views of the firing mechanisms of the rifles and illustrations of the different weapons offered. Price stops and stares at a page advertising roller skates. The carriage pulls toward the sprawling Queen Anne-style Victorian mansion, bristling with towers, steeply pitched gables, and cone-shaped turrets all capped with red fish-scale shingles. Out front, a man with mutton chops addresses a worker.
Request the bay window frame be installed by sundown. Move with haste.
The overseer pats the carpenter on the back as he urges him back to work. Price climbs out of the carriage and looks up at the massive structure. The top-hatted coachman steps over.
Let me get that, sir. Thank you.
The coachman helps with the doctor's luggage.
Busy day of construction here, sir.
Yes.
Days and nights are always busy here.
Really? Nights too?
Right round the clock, sir. This way.
The overseer turns as they walk past.
Most of the rooms don't stay up very long. Like Mrs. Winchester's garden room there. That might not last the season.
Really?
Price glances at the glass-covered garden room.
Please wait in the library, sir. I'll call for Mrs. Marriott.
Now, Price sits in a guest chair in the library, facing an unoccupied desk. The curtains over an open window shift in the wind, then a stiff breeze blows a pile of hand-drawn plans off a stack of books. On the desk, a brass magnifying glass and letter opener set, dangling from a stand, begin to swing. Price's eyes narrow. Behind the desk, cabinet doors shutter. The doctor rises from his chair, his brow knitted. The right-hand cabinet door opens a crack, and Price steps warily around the desk toward it. He nears the built-in wooden cabinet, his blue eyes unblinking. Price reaches out to open the right-hand door. A hand bursts out and grabs his. A maid leans in.
Jesus.
My apologies, sir. The door's making a terrible racket.
No. No, it's quite all right. Yeah. Gave me a fright.
She smiles. The cabinet is actually a pass-through to a hallway bustling with maids and servants. The auburn-haired woman enters.
Dr. Price.
Yes.
Welcome. Marion Merritt, Mrs. Winchester's niece.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. I must say, I have never quite seen a house like this.
My aunt advised me of the nature of your visit. As you are aware, it is unfortunate timing, so I would ask you to behave in a manner befitting the circumstance.
Unfortunate how?
A tragedy occurred.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Are you carrying firearms?
Should I be?
Aunt Sarah forbids them.
Well, I'm completely unarmed.
Good. You, like I, like everyone, are guests in Aunt Sarah's home. You will abide by her rules.
Understood.
You are to stay in this section of the house, the east wing. Aunt Sarah's private domains are off limits.
Understood.
She leads him down a hall.
So, are you close to your aunt?
Is this already part of your evaluation, Dr. Price?
No, ma'am, it is not.
Yes. Aunt Sarah is an exceptional woman. She does not deserve to be treated with anything less than complete respect.
Yes, ma'am, quite right.
Marion heads away, and Price throws a look at a pasty male servant who gazes back confoundedly. The doctor motions to a room.
May I?
Marion returns as Price peers through a set of curtains.
It is the grand ballroom, built almost entirely without nails. The walls and parquet floor are made of six separate hardwoods. And a silver chandelier was imported from Germany.
The doctor glances up at the ornate light fixture. Moments later, they head down another hallway.
Follow me, doctor. There are almost 100 rooms in the house. It's easy to get lost.
He looks up. Overhead, above cast iron slats and below a large skylight, a maid opens a door leading nowhere to clean its jam. A view soars over the disjointed, higgledy-piggledy rooftops and spires of the sprawling mansion. In a bedroom, a maid straightens the bed linens while another brings in fresh flowers. Christ follows Marion into a maze-like chamber where low stairs snake around within a coil of wooden half-walls, the steps rising up only a few inches per tread. He stops partway up this switchback staircase.
How unusual.
Aunt Sarah suffers from arthritis. This makes climbing stairs manageable for her. The house can be overwhelming. Do keep up.
In a bedroom, Marion opens a window while Price inspects an object on the wall.
What is this?
It's a communication device.
Really?
You speak into the holes and a series of pipes travel the sound to the desired room.
He whistles in a hole labeled dining room.
Ingenious.
Yes, you'll find many of my aunt's inventions are state of the art. I trust you'll find everything you need with the room. Aunt Sarah will be joining us for dinner. Perhaps you would like to freshen up beforehand.
Very much look forward to meeting your aunt.
Aunt Sarah would not approve of your drinking before dinner hour. Her sense of smell is still as acute as mine. Respect her wishes.
The auburn-haired woman turns and traipses out of the room. Later, Price holds a glass pipette in his mouth while opening a bottle of laudanum.
You were right about me, Ruby.
He glances at a photo of a blonde woman inside his open pocket watch. He dips the glass straw in the laudanum.
A fraud.
Price releases the liquid onto his tongue. He closes his eyes, his face reflected in an octagonal shaving mirror on a brass stand. The doctor gazes at his reflection.
You're a phony.
The mirror swivels, showing an empty chair.
Oh, that feels good.
He rotates it back to show his face.
Well, you don't know what you're doing.
As he pours water into a wash basin, the mirror turns back to show the empty chair.
You don't know what you're doing. You prove nothing.
He rotates it back to reflect his face. Looking down, he runs a hand over his bearded chin. The mirror returns to the empty chair. He spins the mirror edge on. A ghoulish face is right behind it. Price recoils, and the mirror spins back to cover the white-eyed creature. The reflection shows the doctor leaning against a mantle. He pushes off and heads back to the mirror. He stares at his own unsettled expression, then rotates the mirror edge on again. There's no one behind it now. He aims it at himself, but it flips back to show the chair. The ghoulish young man sits in it, his legs bloody stumps. Price spins to look, but the chair is empty. He presses his fists into his face, then rushes to the door. The pasty servant stands right outside.
Who are you? What do you want?
Dinner will be served in 10 minutes.
You're alone, yes?
Yes, sir.
Nobody else with you?
No, sir.
No, you didn't see anyone just come out of here.
You all right, sir?
I'm fine. I just thought something was... Well, I thought I saw someone else in my room.
Interesting.
I'm fine, yes. Dinner in 10 minutes, yes?
Sir.
Good, thank you.
Price slides the pipette into a leather case alongside the laudanum.
Take it nice and easy.
He pops the case in his medical bag.
There.
A nighttime view floats over the dark mansion. Now in white tie, Price sits at the dinner table, glaring across at Henry as the boy slams a pair of cast iron toy animals together. Marion sits next to her son, wearing an emerald green scoop collar dress with beaded sleeves. Price glances over at the pasty servant, motioning with his eyes toward a decanter sitting near the man, and then to his glass.
Henry.
The servant looks away.
Henry, just...
Price furrows his brow, then turns to the boy.
Henry, you must be very excited to spend some time in your great aunt's house.
We're here because Father died.
Marion blinks uncomfortably.
Well, I am very sorry for your loss, young man.
I'm not.
Henry.
It's my fault. I didn't mean to pry.
Of course you did. That's why you're here.
Yes. So, I recently lost someone myself, so if you feel like discussing anything, I might be able to provide some assistance to yourself or young Henry here.
I imagine you must be very good at your job if Aunt Sarah chose you to be her assessor.
Price's eyes narrow.
I had no idea she chose me herself. Just hoping I can help.
If you want to help, Doctor, you can give my aunt a clean bill of health and be on your way.
Well, I have a duty to my profession and an obligation to my employers.
Aunt Sarah is your employer. It is still half her company.
Meanwhile, servants bustle about in the kitchen, and a man in white gloves carries a tray out of the room, passing by a narrow corridor. A figure all in black walks along that tile-walled corridor, her head covered in a black veil. She steps into the busy kitchen. The kitchen staff nod as she passes.
Good evening, madam.
She passes a gaunt, steel-haired butler as she strides into a hallway. In the dining room, they all rise to their feet, and Marion pulls out the chair at the head of the table. The figure, shrouded in black, strolls into the room. She takes a seat, and her niece pushes the chair in for her, resting a hand briefly on her shoulder, then stepping away. Sarah Winchester flips the veil back from her face, revealing her patrician features and the row of impeccable forehead pin curls fashioned from her gray hair.
Dr. Price?
Mrs. Winchester, it's a pleasure to finally meet you.
Pleasure is due to the lawyers of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company.
Yes. I suppose you're right.
He sits.
Well, I hope everything has been to your satisfaction so far.
I cannot fault the hospitality.
It's quite a special house, is it not?
Now that, ma'am, is a fact beyond dispute.
The gaunt butler fills Price's glass from the decanter.
Thank you. I understand the Winchester is still considered the superior rifle on the market, ma'am.
Superior? Superior at what?
Accuracy, range, stopping power.
Killing. Indiscriminate killing. Very superior.
You feel responsible for the misuse of your product?
If a weapon works as intended, one can hardly call it a misuse.
Well, it can be used for good or bad, depending on the person wielding it.
Sarah shoots a look at her niece.
Yes. Then again, perhaps roller skates are a less dangerous endeavor.
The company is expanding, looking for other opportunities.
I understand that was at your behest, Mrs. Winchester.
It was, to the displeasure of the board.
It appears that strapping wheels to one's feet can also be a perilous endeavor.
Marion smiles.
Yeah.
Price knocks back his drink. Later, the carpenters work outside through the night. In Marion and Henry's bedroom, the mother and son sleep peacefully. In Price's room, the doctor dips his pipette in the laudanum, the photo of the woman nearby. He lies on the bed, eyes closed, hand touching a scar on his chest.
Tell me the story about the farmer who owned the old mule.
No.
I always liked that story.
A delusional disorder.
Yes.
That's what you called it.
Yes.
I don't want to talk anymore. I need you to believe me.
I want to be with you, Ruby. Together forever.
An inscription on the bullet reads, "Together forever." He opens his eyes. Peering over at the bedside table, he checks his pocket watch. It's midnight. Price rolls to the edge of the bed and looks at the communication apparatus on the wall. He stares at the five openings with room names below each one, then rises and steps over to this annunciator device. He leans toward the holes.
Hello?
The doctor zeroes in on the front parlor, garden room, and library tubes. He leans closer, peering into the brass-rimmed holes.
Hello?
He turns his head, leaning an ear toward the device. A pale finger snakes out of the garden room tube, stretching out to him as he looks away. He straightens up and turns to look back at the device. The finger is gone. The doctor stares off pensively. He walks out of his room, his dinner jacket half on, and steps into the dark hallway. He shrugs the other arm of his jacket on and starts down the hall. Creeping down a flight of stairs, he stops partway down to peer around an arched lattice and bumps his head on a decorative wooden knob. He glances annoyedly up at the object. He squints into the shadows, peeking around an ornate, unlit candelabra built into the newel post at the base of the staircase. Gingerly, he climbs down the rest of the steps. He looks behind, then turns and peers ahead. Drawn to the sound, he steps forward, wincing at the creaking floorboards. He peers between two heavy curtains into Sarah Winchester's library. Sarah sits on the floor behind her desk, opening a safe inside a low cabinet. She slides out a beveled glass keepsake box and cradles it lovingly between her palms. She lifts her head, and Price ducks out of sight. He creeps away from the library and heads down a hallway. Spinning away from the approaching voices, he opens an understair door with an angle-cut top corner and slips inside. He peers down at the crack below the door. A light draws close and stops just outside his hiding place, glaring off the polished wood floor. The light moves on. Price leans his head back relievedly. He turns to his left and squints into the darkness, then creeps deeper into the shadows. Just ahead, a staircase leads down to a gloomy lower floor. A white-eyed girl slithers up the stairs toward him. He lurches backward, diving out into the hall and closing the door, leaning his weight against it.
Oh, you have poisoned your mind, Ack. You have poisoned your mind. Release me.
He strides away. In Marion and Henry's room, mother and son lie on the bed. The boy rises up from his pillow. He flinches, peering over the side of the mattress. He turns, sitting fully up in the bed. Henry rises to his knees and crawls to the foot of the bed. He leans over the edge, his head dangling upside down, and reaches to lift up the covers hanging from the mattress. Eyes wide, he peers under the bed. A roller skate zooms toward him, rockets past, barreling out the open bedroom door. His mouth hanging open, the boy climbs off the bed and heads toward the door. Elsewhere, on a servant's annunciator panel, a card bearing the words "Garden Room" faces outward. In the hall outside the garden room, Price yanks on a wooden bar barricading the door. He peers through a narrow opening into the dark solarium.
Oh, deja vu.
Now he steps out the front door of the mansion and peers around. He glances to the right to see carpenters working by lantern light in the distance, then turns to the left and strides over to the outside entrance of the garden room. That door is also barred, a carefully crafted wooden brace nailed across it. Price pulls on the barricade. A view from within the garden room shows the doctor silhouetted behind the dingy glass as he strains to see inside. Unseen by Price, something moves within the room. Two of the carpenters head toward Price, so he ducks around the side of the solarium and leans into the glass as the men pass by. Elsewhere, a carpenter studies hand-drawn plans by the glow of a lantern. Next to him, a worker saws as a figure appears in the shadows behind them. It's Henry, still in his nightshirt, the burlap sack over his head. Price walks through the grass across from the house, glancing over at the men working through the night. Meanwhile, Henry, the sack over his head, pads through a construction area, stepping over a beam. Price gazes up to see the boy four floors up, walking to the edge of a room under construction.
Hey.
Price runs forward.
Hey!
Henry leans out, dropping off the edge.
Move, move!
Price breaks the boy's fall, collapsing to the ground below him.
Oh.
Someone pulls the sack off, and the boy stares at the doctor with white eyes.
I see you.
Henry's eyes return to normal. Marion rushes out and embraces her boy.
Oh, Henry! Darling. Oh, what's happening to you, sweetheart?
As she hugs her boy tightly, she looks over his shoulder at Price.
Thank you.
The doctor turns from her to Sarah, who stands in the doorway, fingers pressed anxiously to her lips.
Darling, what's happening to you?
The next day, Sarah studies construction plans in her library, standing with her back to Price.
Mrs. Winchester, I really must have your full attention.
Oh, you have it, Dr. Price.
Yes, but perhaps you would be more comfortable taking...
Last night was quite a traumatic event. I'm grateful for your actions. I fear you may have me at an emotional disadvantage today.
Yes, I understand. I don't mean to pry, but has Master Henry been prone to sleepwalking in the past?
No. But you may know he did witness the death of his father.
Yes.
She sits at her desk and gazes intently at him.
Well, this is the first in a series of sessions I wish to conduct, and I can assure you that today will be quite benign.
No, let's just get straight to it, Doctor. You are here to assess my erratic behavior, are you not?
Well, erratic behavior is not the phrase that I would have chosen.
Now,
but...
I will speak with you truthfully.
Please.
But you will do me the same courtesy.
Of course.
Do you suffer from soldier syndrome?
I'm sorry?
Are you an abuser of medication?
Mrs. Winchester, I think it's best if I ask the questions.
Your wife, did she believe you're a good therapist?
We're not here to discuss my wife.
Your wife, Ruby?
Sarah looks at him knowingly.
No, we are not, and I would appreciate your honesty. Are you an abuser of medication?
No, I am not.
She throws him a disbelieving look and sits back in her chair.
So?
I will share a fact with you, which you may find questionable, but I assure you it is a fact.
Please.
I am cursed.
Cursed how?
Have you read my papers?
Of course I have.
And what do they say?
Well, among many things, they say that this is the house that spirits built.
You see, profiting from such a thing as violence and death, that is a wickedness that follows you like a shadow.
Yes, we might also call those shadows guilt. But tell me, how do these shadows follow you?
I may be getting old, Dr. Price, but I assure you, I have not lost my senses. I know the difference between illusion and reality.
I see.
He sets down his notebook and pulls out a bill.
Your mind rules your body.
He folds the note.
Your mind can be incredibly creative, but it can also, at times, fail us.
My mind has never failed me.
What we see, taste, and touch...
He balances it.
...are interpreted and processed to give us our truth. And that truth can in turn be an illusion, created, distorted...
He pulls a finger away.
...by grief.
The bill remains cantilevered out from one finger.
Do you believe in ghosts, Dr. Price?
No, ma'am. Why would I?
Offering my staff that bill would be greatly appreciated. Even the nickel inside the bill would be a respectable start.
He lets the coin weighing the end of the bill slide out.
Oh, really? Silly illusions? Do you take me for a fool?
No, ma'am, I do not.
No more diversions from reality. No more parlor tricks. And your medication will have to be confiscated.
Mrs. Winchester, I'm sorry, but I must insist. I'm not a child.
This is my home, Dr. Price.
I will not be...
You will obey my rules. If you want me to open up this house for you, you need clarity.
They lock eyes. Then Price looks downward.
Do you have another question for me?
He reaches for his notebook.
Yes, ma'am.
Later, the gaunt butler leads Price to his room.
Is it really necessary to confine me to quarters?
That is Madam's wish, sir.
They stop outside the door.
And the condition of Master Henry?
He too is confined to quarters. and Mrs. Marriott has not left his side.
Price searches the older man's expression, then strides into his room and pushes the door closed, their eyes still locked. The butler steps over to a chair set a few feet from the door and sits down. Inside his room, Price reaches into his doctor's bag and pulls out the laudanum case. The bottle is gone. He rummages through his bag, then kicks the desk angrily. He picks up an envelope and cuts it open with a letter opener. Inside is a short message typed under the letterhead of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company.
Sir, the members of the board eagerly await your evaluation. I trust you'll make an accurate assessment regarding Arthur C. Gates, Chief Legal Officer.
The envelope also contains a few crisp $20 bills, folded in half. Price fans the cash out, lifting his brow, and tosses the money on the desk. That night, Price writes by candlelight.
Sarah Winchester, psychological assessment and mental status examination. Dr. Eric A. Price, April 16, 1906. Appearance, normal. Hygiene, physical characteristics, all normal. Patient struggles with the loss of her husband and child. Her behavior is at times slightly aggressive. Perception, visual hallucinations that patient often refers to as shadows or ghosts.
A flashback shows a session in her library.
I feel them. Their presence.
Price nods at her as her gaze darts around the corners of the ceiling. A flash shows a view of a sitting room and a bedroom beyond.
Go on.
Another flash shows a parlor with a pump organ and a silver tea set.
I feel their presence, their energy. Their unfinished business has brought them here.
Do you perhaps in any way blame them for the death of your husband and child?
I will mourn William and dear Annie, always. I love all my family very much, Dr. Price. They are the true riches of my life. And I will do whatever it takes to protect them.
Back in the present, Price looks up from his candlelit desk. He opens his door. The gaunt butler rises from the chair as the pasty servant stands a few yards beyond. Price steps up to the older man.
You tell me why these bells chime at midnight?
It's midnight, sir.
Well, yes, but is there any significance to it?
It's midnight, sir.
The butler stares at him, unblinking.
Thank you.
Price backs into his room. The doctor heads toward his desk, then strides over to the window. He pulls back the shade. Beyond the carpenters on a nearby rooftop, he spies Sarah in the wing opposite as she strolls past a series of windows, the black veil over her face and a glowing oil lamp in her hand. Price turns from the window and grabs his jacket from the back of his desk chair. He slips the jacket on and returns to the window, pulling up the sash. The doctor slips out of the window and, crouching, scampers across a roof. Moments later, he climbs in a leaded glass window near the base of a staircase. Three candles burn on a table at the top of the stairs. He strides down a hallway and turns a corner to peer into a chamber lit by an electric wall sconce. Price glances around the brightly lit area, then steps back into the dark hall. Up ahead, he notices the staircase that curves off to the left. He begins climbing the steps, then stops. He peers up at the ceiling, blocking the top of these stairs to nowhere. Grinning broadly, he climbs back down. Price makes another turn and finds himself at the end of a different hallway. He stops just beyond a latticed archway and looks up toward an unlit ceiling fixture. He passes beyond a set of green curtains and glances to his left, peering into the gloom. In the distance, he sees a set of double doors that are open a crack. Flames flickering beyond the diamond-shaped Flemish windows cut into each of them. He heads toward the doors, his eyes narrowing. The doctor peers through the gap between the doors and squints into the room within. Surrounded by flickering candles, a hand draws construction plans. Price leans closer to the crack to see who it is. Behind her veil, Sarah moves her head as if in a trance, her hand drawing an intricate construction plan. She doesn't look down at the page as she sketches a room full of cabinets and cases. The fire in the fireplace and all the candles in the room go out. Sarah lifts up her veil and shivers. In the darkness, condensation billows from her jagged exhales. Price, peering through the crack, watches the old woman hug herself for warmth. A ghoulish face appears in the gap, staring out at him. Price tears off. He sprints into a hall where every door is barricaded closed with wooden bars. On either side of the corridor, carefully crafted wooden braces are nailed to all the closed doors, sealing them shut. The doctor rushes off. Back outside, he climbs across a rooftop toward his room, sneaking past the carpenters. He clambers into the window and slides it shut. Price drops into a chair, his hands over his face.
I swear the Lord, I'm still in my system. It was just those withdrawals. It had to be.
The light of dawn touches the spires of the mansion, in Sarah's library.
I have a question for you, Dr. Price.
Again, Mrs. Winchester, it's best if I ask.
What is it like to die?
Talking about your...
Deceased for 3 minutes, were you not?
The doctor's eyes stay glued to his notebook.
You know...
Sarah rises.
I keep records.
She crosses to a book cabinet.
Of all the lives a Winchester has taken. Hundreds have been reported. Probably thousands haven't.
She gazes at folios.
The guilty, the innocent. The rifle doesn't discriminate. And many of the souls make their way to this house.
Well, it's impressive. As you can clearly see, I'm still here, so... Perhaps you could do me the kindness of taking me off that shelf.
She nods.
You were shot.
I was.
She steps away from the folios with names and years on their spines and walks toward him. He pulls the bullet from his pocket and holds it up.
This. And it did kill me.
She takes the bullet from him and studies it.
You kept it and refurbished it.
I did.
Why?
Well, because it's a reminder of my past. Because it's my connection to death. The wall that I've lost.
Instruments of death have a powerful connection to the afterlife.
She hands the bullet back to him.
We hold on to mementos to help us heal, but sometimes they do more harm than good.
Precisely. So tell me, what do you think it is you're holding on to?
Sarah glances around before meeting his eyes.
Have you ever been to a spiritualist?
Price shakes his head.
But I understand you have.
You know, it is believed that once we have departed this world, we can see others who have left their physical selves behind.
Is that right?
Have you ever experienced such a thing?
I can't say that I have, no.
Is it painful to die?
Mrs. Winchester, we really must continue with this evaluation.
Please. Doctor, please.
Yes.
His brow creases.
And then nothing. Just a calmness. And when I came back, it was painful again. That makes sense.
Yes.
Yes, because you two have experienced great pain.
Oh, grief. Can be far more crippling than arthritis, Doctor.
Mrs. Winchester, do you blame the shadows for the loss of your husband and child?
She glances to the side.
Were you out of your room last night?
Yes, I was.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me the truth.
He bows his head, smiling slightly. Elsewhere, a hand-drawn schematic shows the specs of a display cabinet as carpenters construct one. Back in the library, Price pours a cup of coffee.
So, why all the noise? Why all this construction?
They want me to build, Doctor. The spirits. Killed by the rifle. They guide me.
Guide you in drawing building plans?
Yes.
What? Why?
Well, the rooms, of course. You see, once their rooms are completed, their presence grows stronger.
Hence the house that spirits built.
Yes. The shadows that follow me. They have unfinished business. You saw what I did last night, didn't you?
I did.
At the chime of midnight, they clamor. The bells summon them. They communicate through plans and drawings. They want me to reconstruct the rooms that they died in. Then they can enter our world. The trouble is, I don't always know who it is I'm speaking with. It could be some innocent bystander or...
A flashback shows the cabinet room plans.
Victim of a crime or...
The word rifles is written repeatedly at the bottom.
Someone else.
Who else, Mrs. Winchester?
Last night, a spirit more powerful than any I've encountered endangered my family.
She stands in the unfinished room.
Who are you?
Back in the library.
Doctor, who do you see in this room at this moment?
Just you.
He glances around.
Only me.
He turns his body to his right, then to his left, taking in the entire well-appointed room. Cup and saucer in his hands, he lifts them in a shrug.
Just you.
She drops her head forward.
It will take time. You still need to clear your head.
Price gulps down his coffee. Bright sunshine washes over the complex intersecting gabled roofs, dormers, and pyramidal turrets of the mansion. Dr. Price stands outside the garden room, trying to peer through the glass. He rests his hand on the brace barring the door, then turns and notices the gaunt butler passing by.
Oh, sir. I would like to check in on Mrs. Marrett and Master Henry, if I may.
I will inquire, sir.
Perhaps may I ask you a question?
Question, sir?
Yes. Let me tell me, have you ever seen any ghosts?
No, sir.
But you have heard the rumors, the stories.
I have heard tall tales. Some taller than others.
Have you ever witnessed anything out of the ordinary?
The butler glares at Price and walks away. Meanwhile, in a completed but unfurnished chamber, the overseer with mutton chops inspects the cabinet room plans.
So display cabinets along the walls, and then a line of them down the middle of the room.
Yes, ma'am. And what type of Winchester would you like delivered?
She locks eyes with him.
Every type. Every model.
Later, workmen carry in a cabinet, then in the library.
Let's go back. Tell me, please, what happens once these rooms are finished?
Well, the spirit's presence grows more powerful, more focused. And their voices get stronger. And we converse.
Converse how? About what?
I show them my deep remorse. I want to help them let go of their grief and their anger.
And how do they react?
Favorably. Yes, mostly. Once they are at peace, then they can move on. We can tear down their room and then we start again.
And are there those that don't react so favorably?
She nods.
Yes. Yes, we lock them away.
How does one lock a spirit away?
13 nails seals them in. Once they find peace, we can release them and they can leave this house.
So 13 is a devilish number to protect you from devils?
No, that is a divine number. To protect the cycle of life and death.
And does this divine number always work? I mean, what if a spirit simply doesn't want to be locked away?
Sarah's eyes narrow.
The unmendable souls prey upon the innocent and the pure.
And by the innocent and pure, you mean Master Henry?
She gazes at him mournfully, her eyes glistening.
We can stand between them. I and you. With your assistance, I can help this spirit find peace.
Price throws her a sideways glance, and she leans back in her chair.
You don't believe any of this, I understand.
Ma'am, I do not. I do not believe in anything I cannot see or study. Mrs. Winchester, you have built house, this place, this reality. Therefore, you can control it, can you not?
Yes, perhaps.
We all have the ability to create and control our own reality, but for some, for you, Mrs. Winchester, for you, that will mean letting go of the past.
Make your assessment, Doctor.
A tiny smile flashes across her lips.
Say what you feel is the truth about Sarah Winchester.
And if that means you lose control of your company?
Oh. There are worse things in this world to lose than that, Doctor.
Now, workers slide rifle crates off the back of a carriage. Price strolls over to the man in mutton chops, glancing up toward the room Henry dropped from.
To see you finish the new room.
Of course.
It must be very profitable for you. All this working around the clock.
We all appreciate Mrs. Winchester's ongoing employment. And her creativity.
I must say, that creativity certainly leads to some rather odd designs. Do you think it possible a woman of advancing years may be susceptible to flights of fancy?
No, sir. I do not.
Price smiles politely, then looks toward the solarium.
I see inside the garden room, please. I had one similar, and I would be much obliged if...
No, sir. That room is sealed. Therefore is off limits. Good day, Doctor.
The overseer strides away, and Price raises his eyebrows.
Well, Eric, that's going really well.
Later, Marion opens her bedroom door to find the doctor standing there. Behind her, Henry lies sleeping in the bed. Price backs up, and she joins him in the hallway.
How is he?
Fine. Resting.
Has he ever been prone to behavior like that in the past?
No.
Never?
She squints at him, then glances toward her son.
She told you, didn't she, about the Winchester curse?
Yes.
Do you believe her, or do you think she's crazy?
I think crazy is a dangerous word. People have certain medical conditions, and with the right diagnosis and treatment, they can be helped.
In the new room, workers pull rifles out of crates and hang them in display cabinets.
I do not believe in curses, Doctor.
Good. Nor do I. I think perhaps your son's behavior has been triggered by the sudden death of his father.
Yes.
Could you tell me how your husband died?
He had demons. But not the kind that my aunt believes haunt her.
In the library, Sarah opens her safe.
Go on.
Aunt Sarah's husband died suddenly of tuberculosis. And then she lost poor Annie. She believes our family curse is spreading.
Sarah slides out her beveled glass keepsake box and removes a case containing a lock of hair and a post-mortem photo of a baby. She lifts the curl of hair and kisses it. Back in the hall.
My husband loved the drink more than his wife and child. I believe that was his curse. Now he was gone, and I am alone, better off in so many ways without him. But it terrifies me.
Don't let that fear control you.
Price taps his head.
Any fear only exists in your mind. When we fear the most, we must take control. You can be a fighter. You can be a protector.
I do not feel like a protector. Aunt Sarah is the fighter.
Yes.
She would die to save us.
Perhaps.
Have you ever loved someone so much you would die to save them?
He stares off.
I have. I also knew someone who was haunted by demons. Voices.
And did the time ever come when you had to protect them?
It did.
What did you do?
I died.
They both turn toward the sound. Marion opens her bedroom door, Price right behind her. The boy is gone. Next to the bed, wind rustles the curtains over an open window. In the new room, someone takes a rifle engraved with the image of a buck from a cabinet. Now, Sarah makes her way up the switchback staircase. She turns, surprised.
Henry.
Henry shoots. He misses, and Sarah drops behind a half wall and crawls along the floor.
Henry.
He blasts a hole through the partition. Sarah freezes, listening. The boy slides the rifle barrel over ridges in the beadboard, drawing closer. He's directly on the opposite side of the partition now. Sarah's eyes widen.
Henry. Henry, it's me.
shot blasts through just to Sarah's left. Her eyes dart around anxiously. She pushes off from the floor and gingerly rises up. Peering over the edge of the half wall, she catches sight of Henry gazing right back at her, his eyes milky white. He points the rifle at her face.
No.
The boy flips the rifle around and clubs her with the stock. Price bursts in. He grabs the boy, and the overseer snatches the weapon. Henry struggles violently as Price and his mother hold him.
Stop, Henry, stop!
Who are you?
Die!
The boy blinks, and his eyes return to normal. He peers around at the others, confusedly.
Mother?
Marion hugs her son. In the boy's bedroom, the overseer pops a jammed round from the rifle as Marion tucks Henry in.
I'm so sorry, Aunt Sarah. I've let you down and I've let Henry down.
No. No. This spirit has a power we've not seen before. Oh, my God. It can take over a mind.
Price's brow knits. Sarah turns to the overseer.
John, send everyone home. Only we in this room must remain.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. This child must be taken to a hospital immediately.
No. No, we must watch over him.
Hospital immediately.
No, no one else will understand. He must stay here.
Insanity.
We will watch over him.
Dr. Price may be right.
Sarah glances at her niece.
No, no, we will protect him. We will protect him at all costs. John, come with me.
Aunt Sarah!
Out in the hall, John turns to his boss.
Ma'am, I insist that you receive medical treatment.
Seal that door. 13 nails. Now. Now.
Yes, ma'am.
He lifts a bar from beside Marion's door and positions it. Sarah gazes into the darkness.
You leave my family alone.
John pulls a hammer from his tool belt.
You speak with me.
Inside the bedroom, Price strides to the door and tries to open it.
Let's just think this through. Please, Mrs. Marion, be rational. Henry clearly has a trauma and needs help. Your aunt is caught in a superstition. We need...
A wardrobe vibrates. All three of them turn to the corner of the room, where the wardrobe stands against a wall. Price, his jaw set, steps toward the piece of furniture. Marion wraps her arm around her son as they watch from the bed. Price steps closer, one hand resting on his hip. Behind him, Marion takes a deep breath. He reaches for the brass handle on the darkly stained quarter-sawn oak door of the wardrobe. It's empty. On the back wall of the wardrobe is a cluster of coat hooks arranged in a diamond formation. The back of the wardrobe opens.
13 hooks.
Sarah steps through.
You must listen to me.
Is the rifle room finished?
Yes, ma'am.
My God, this presence is so strong. Oh, I feel its hatred.
Oh, enough with the games! We're taking this boy to a hospital.
We should listen to him.
Yes, the boy tried to kill you.
No, the shadows will follow us wherever we go. No, Henry will not suffer the same fate.
Henry's condition cannot be cured by witchcraft. The boy needs a doctor.
Conditions can be cured, doctor. Curses cannot.
Mrs. Marriott, will you please listen to me?
Marion. I'm going with Dr. Price.
No, Henry must stay.
We'll make the arrangements.
No.
Gentlemen, you'll excuse
me. No, Marion, please. Henry must stay. He must stay with us.
Aunt Sarah, I must think of Henry. I should go with him.
I will prove it to you. Yes, I will. Just wait.
Sarah slips back out through the secret door in the wardrobe, leaving John and the butler with the mother and child. Meanwhile, Price dashes downstairs and rushes over to a wall-mounted phone. He pulls a card from his pocket, lifts the receiver, leans into the mouthpiece, and spins the hand crank.
Operator?
In an office.
Winchester Repeating Arms Company, this is Arthur Gates.
Mr. Gates, it's Dr. Mary Price here.
Oh, I trust the assessment is going well, Doctor.
I understand you received our letter. It's fine, Mr. Gates, but I require immediate transportation to the nearest hospital.
Is everything all right?
Everything's fine. Just please, a driver, as soon as possible.
Of course, right away.
Thank you.
And the assessment, Doctor?
You'll get what you wanted.
He hangs up, then bumps into the pasty servant.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be.
Sir, we are all deeply concerned for Master Henry's well-being. If there is anything I can do to assist you, I...
Well, actually, you can. I need to get my bags, please.
Of course.
Thank you.
Happy to help.
He follows the servant off. Meanwhile, Sarah steps into the cabinet-filled rifle room.
Mrs. Winchester is truly a remarkable woman. She knows what she is doing. She has created a vessel for the deceased to communicate with
her. She certainly created some architectural oddities.
This house. I've seen things.
Sarah glances around.
I know this room.
Things?
The dead. Criminals. Lost souls that met a violent end.
The servant searches Price's face.
You've seen them, haven't you?
The man turns and continues leading the way through the halls.
Dr. Price, many staff have reported hearing noises. They come from inside rooms that have been nailed shut. Strange occurrences in those rooms, that is why the doors have been sealed to keep the unruly in. But the staff have only heard noises. To see them, well, I believe you and I are unique.
Really? Yes, but perhaps it's all just a symptom of Mrs. Winchester's persuasive influence.
Sir, locking Mrs. Marriott and her child away is only delaying the inevitable.
And what is the inevitable?
They are Winchester. They will all die!
The servant's face becomes monstrous. Price recoils, falling back in the darkness. Alone now, he turns to discover he's on the dead-end staircase. The doctor rushes down the stairs and peers around the empty hallways. In the library, Sarah opens the glass doors of a folio bookcase. Elsewhere, Price storms down a hallway and spins around a corner. In the library, Sarah studies newspapers and photos from the folios. In the hall, Price dashes over to where John guards her door.
Mr. Hans, is she in there?
Yes, Doctor.
Good. You need to hear this. Mrs. Winchester, there is a man in your employ who has clearly lost his mind. He just...
She holds a newspaper.
That's him.
You saw him. You spoke with him.
Well, yes, I spoke with him just now. The man threatened you.
Read it. Read the paper.
He looks at the article featuring a photo of the pasty-faced man.
Corporal Benjamin Joseph Block was killed during a siege at the Winchester Repeating Arms General Office. That's impossible.
This newspaper is 20 years old.
She picks up a crime scene photo.
Cruelty, grief, and loss can make people do unimaginable things.
The shot shows Ben Block on the floor surrounded by gun cabinets.
Ben lost two brothers on the battlefield. The youngest was only 14 years old. Their Confederate muskets were no match for the Winchester rifles of the Union Army. They were cut down.
A flashback shows the Winchester Repeating Arms Company general offices. Ben pulls a burlap sack down over his face.
Ben swore revenge.
He heads inside.
To him, the people who created the weapon that killed his brothers were as guilty as those who pulled the trigger.
Rifle ready, Ben lopes in the front door, slamming it shut behind him, then shoots a man in the back.
He killed 15 innocent people that day.
A fleeing woman is shot.
He locked himself in the display room. We used to call it the show-off room.
Ben slides off the burlap sack.
We know you're in there! We have the building surrounded!
Beautiful dream awaken to me.
Seated between display cabinets with his rifle on his lap, Ben stares across at the door.
Officer John Mandel told the press I'm extremely proud of my team and that scum like Block can't escape my men and their Winchesters.
Police kick the door open and storm in. Ben gets off a shot, then the officers open fire. His torso twitches as bullets rip through him. He drops from the chair. Ben's blood-flecked hand clutches the rifle near the engraving of a buck. Back in the present, Sarah leads the two men.
This way. When the bell chimes at midnight, he'll be at his most powerful. Do you know who the most terrifying monster is, Doctor?
No.
The one you invite into your own home.
Sunlight from outside rakes across her features as she turns away. Sarah pushes open the double glass doors of the rifle room. Price steps past her, entering the chamber.
This is it.
He strides past rows of gun cabinets.
This is the room.
Sarah creeps forward behind him, her eyes darting around the room, and John brings up the rear, gripping the rifle he took from Henry. Price steps around a cabinet to see an alcove with a table and two chairs. He holds up the crime scene photo, comparing it to the area he stands before.
This is an exact replica of the room he was killed in.
Yes. And now that it is complete, he is in this world. Do you see anyone, Doctor?
It's impossible.
Doctor, you must believe.
It's illogical.
Sarah spasms, her mouth dropping open. John lifts the rifle, and the doctor watches as Sarah strides through the room.
Corporal Block, please. Please feel my deep remorse for the death of your brothers, of James and young Harry, by the Winchester rifle. I know all three of you feel pain and torment, but violence cannot bring justice. Only more suffering, and I will not allow my family to suffer anymore. Leave this house with your brothers. I hope together you can find peace.
In Marion's and Henry's bedroom, the mother packs a suitcase, then glances over to see her son gazing at her from a chair, his hands folded in his lap and his head tilted slightly to the side.
Beautiful dreamer, wake unto me. Starlight and dewdrops are waiting for thee. Sounds of the room.
The wardrobe with the secret door shakes.
Held by the moonlight of all passed away.
Marion and the gaunt butler stare as the door to the wardrobe swings open. It's empty, except for the 13 coat hooks over the secret passage. The room shakes. The adult's eyes widen, but Henry stares off calmly. In the rifle room, Sarah and Price peer around as everything shudders. John steadies a cabinet.
It's Ben.
Back in the bedroom, Marion turns to see her son's eyes are white. Inside the wardrobe, a coat hook drops. Everything quakes violently, and a painting crashes down from the wall. In the rifle room, Sarah careens into a table. Price stumbles. Part of a wall collapses, and plaster showers down. John lurches as firearms tumble out of their shattered cabinets around him. He sees a bullet display board that seems about to fall on Sarah. He reaches for her, but is yanked away. Dropping the rifle, he flies out of the room and hits a wall. An unseen force drags him violently down a staircase, past the hallway full of barricaded doors. Outside, a brick chimney that runs up the side of a tower crumbles. Inside, John stares up in horror as the ceiling collapses on him.
Stop them!
In the rifle room, Price makes his way to Sarah, wrapping his arms protectively around her. He's yanked away from her, sliding across the floor out of the room, the doors closing behind him. He tumbles down a staircase as debris falls above him, blocking the entrance to the rifle room. The sconces lighting the hall of barred doors flicker and go out. Price lies on his back in the dark hallway. A nail drops down beside him. He looks up to see another nail pop out of a door barricade. Price grabs a hammer and jumps to his feet.
Mrs. Winchester!
He heads back up the stairs, but more debris falls.
I'll find another way to get to you!
Behind him, more nails slide out of the barricades, and they drop to the floor. He raises the hammer defensively, then dashes away. Elsewhere, Marion lights the oil lamp.
Henry, sweetheart, where are you?
She turns around in the darkness.
Henry.
There's a hand Henry. Right in front of her. It's still, the fingers frozen. She peers over to see it belongs to the dead body of the butler, half buried under bricks, his lifeless eyes wide.
Henry! Henry! Henry!
Price makes his way down a hallway strewn with debris, then turns and pushes open a door. A white-eyed man stands there, an iron shackle around the dark skin of his neck. Price spins away.
This is just in your mind, Vera. It's just in your mind. This is only in your mind.
gripping the hammer tightly, he turns back toward the room. He jumps toward the open doorway, but the man in chains is gone. The doctor pivots and leans back into a table exhaustedly, pressing the hammer into his forehead. The bell over the servant's annunciator panel rings, and one of the room cards flips into view. Price steps toward it. The card bears the words, "Garden Room." Meanwhile, Marion rounds a corner, holding her lamp high. She looks down the hallway with all the wooden barricades now on the floor in front of their doors.
Henry.
She starts down the hall, shivering.
Henry, where are you?
She pads between the fallen barricades through strips of lath and plaster dust.
Henry, sweetheart. Where are you?
She passes a door with a chalky smudge above the knob. At the end of the hall, Marion heads left. She spins back around to see all the doors of the hallway have opened. She gazes into the door that had the handprint on it, peering into the shadowy room. Her brow knits, and she rushes away. Meanwhile, nails drop as Price uses the hammer to pry them out of the wood, barring the garden room. He steps inside the dark room. An empty glider chair rocks. The doctor peers around, then steps further into the room, closing the door behind him. He crosses over to the glider. Squatting down before the chair, he gently places a hand on each wooden arm, stopping the rocking.
I always loved our garden room, sweetheart.
Really?
But you let it die.
Oh, no.
Tell me the story about the farmer who owned the old mule.
No.
I always liked that story.
They built our garden room.
The farmer's old mule fell into his well. Go on, Eric.
Ruby steps into view.
The farmer heard.
What? I heard the mule crying. And it broke his heart.
He chose to bury the animal in the well and put it out of it.
It's hardship.
He started shoveling. The mule realized that every time dirt fell on his back, he could shake it off and step up, shovel after shovel.
He should shake it off.
Shake it off. It wasn't long before the old mule, battered and exhausted, stepped over the wall of that well. What should have buried him?
Saved him.
And he overcame.
This is not real. This is not happening. You are not real.
I've tried to be a good wife.
The voices, they're not real, Ruby. They were never real. They were just inside your head.
All these years, all I wanted was for you to believe me, but...
I should have put you in care.
You never did.
I should have put you in
just
care.
Just something that can be diagnosed and then treated like any other crazy person.
Yes, I did. I made a mistake.
She holds a rifle.
A delusional disorder.
Yes.
That's what you called it.
Yes. Put the gun down, Ruby, please. We can talk about this.
I don't want to talk anymore. I need you to believe me.
I don't know what I believe anymore.
Someone like you never will.
She points the barrel under her chin.
Please, I'm lost without you, Ruby. I'm lost without you. Don't do it now.
He dives for the weapon, and it goes off. Price drops, accidentally shot in the chest. Ruby gazes down at her husband, horrified. She cocks the rifle's lever and presses the barrel back under her chin. A view from above shows Price motionless on his back as his wife's blood spreads out by his feet. In a closer view, her hand tenderly touches the wound on his chest.
You can go on. You need to let go of your guilt so that I can let go of mine.
the truth.
The bloody hole in his vest is now gone.
I'm so sorry.
He opens his eyes and lifts his head. He's surrounded by spirits. The doctor climbs to his feet and looks at all the white-eyed figures filling the garden room. A Native American holding a bow and arrow glares back at him, as do a gray-haired woman, a bearded man, and others, all with milky eyes. The garden room door opens by itself, and the Native American turns toward a hatchet resting on a shelf. Price follows his gaze. Moments later, he strides down a hallway with the hatchet in his hand. He stops beside a staircase where the man in chains kneels, his back crisscrossed with scars. He spins his head to Price, then spills a pile of nails from his palms onto a stair tread. The doctor glances up the staircase, then back to the nails. The chained man is gone. Price picks up the nails with one hand. He slowly starts up the steps. Upstairs, he turns to see Ruby standing at the end of a hall. She turns and points to the staircase that curves off to the left. Price heads down the hall, his wife no longer there, and climbs up the dead-end stairs to nowhere. At the top, he starts hacking at the ceiling. He sticks his head through the hole. He's cut through to the rifle room. Price pulls himself up into the room and, his hatchet at the ready, peers around a display cabinet. Sarah sits motionless in a chair among the debris, her face covered with her black veil.
Mrs. Winchester, are you all right?
This spirit is destroying the balance of this house. It has to be stopped.
A rifle and an open box of cartridges sits on the table beside her. Price's gaze darts around the room.
Master Henry and Marion, we need to find them.
She points without turning.
Seal that door. Ben must not leave.
Elsewhere, Marion rounds a hallway corner.
Henry?
She walks forward, her face lit by the faint glow of her lamp. A roller skate zips across her path. Marion walks over to see where the skates disappeared. She steps through the understair doorway with the angle-cut top Price hid behind. Eyes wide, she peers down the basement stairs, catching sight of the skates rolling down the steps to the bottom. She takes a breath and heads down into the gloom below. In the rifle room, Price hammers a bar across the glass windows of the double doors.
13.
Sit.
He sits across from the veiled woman.
Sarah, I can see them. I can see all of them.
You're the only one who can. You believe?
I do. I do.
Dead for 3 minutes. Killed by the Winchester rifle. You are connected to this house.
He nods. In the basement, Marion creeps deeper into the darkness, walking past cloth-draped furniture, bed frames, and crates.
I'm not afraid.
The way ahead is pitch black.
I won't let fear control me.
She strides further into the gloom, one hand raised defensively. A light bursts on. It's the orange glow of a furnace. Her son stands before it, his back to his mother. She runs to him and spins him around. His eyes are white.
Oh, please. Please come back to me.
She hugs him, then turns toward the sound. The glow of the furnace doesn't pierce the surrounding darkness. Back in the rifle room.
Marion and Henry are in grave danger. The only way to save them is to stop Ben here and now. Ben, leave my family alone.
In the basement, Henry's hand twitches.
You speak to me.
The boy's fingers writhe.
Talk to me.
He makes a fist.
No.
Henry throws open his hand. His eyes are normal. Marion turns, the cadaverous face of Ben right beside her, unseen. In the rifle room, Sarah squirms.
Sarah.
Corporal Block is in this room.
Her shrouded head drops forward, then back, as if possessed.
Winchesters are on our plague! This whore bitch has to die!
Sarah, fight him!
My brothers were killed by the rifle!
Sarah,
murdered by this instrument of death!
Fight him!
That killed
Sarah,
your wife!
Him.
In the basement, Marion clings to her son in front of the glowing furnace. In the rifle room, Sarah rises and puts the rifle under her own chin.
Present!
I want you to suffer! Marion is mine! Henry is mine!
No,
she aims at Price.
These vermin profit from death!
Sarah, fight him.
No more!
No!
She blasts a cabinet leg, and it falls over the hole in the floor that Price chopped.
Seal the floor, Doctor. 13 nails. Hurry! His rage is endless.
He nails the cabinet down.
But he can be stopped.
How?
By something. Something in this room. He's afraid of something. I felt it.
She looks at the rifle she fired. It bears the Buck engraving.
His gun.
A flashback shows Ben cocking the rifle.
It's 12.
Price grabs the last nail.
This is the gun.
Flashes show Ben killing people. Price hammers the last nail with the hatchet.
He used to kill.
The hatchet is torn from his hand and slams into a cabinet door. Price strides over and grabs Ben's gun.
Do you see him?
No.
He uses the butt of the rifle as a hammer.
There. Done.
Now he's locked in.
And so are we.
Outside, the bell swings in the tower. Sarah glances nervously around the rifle room.
Ben, show yourself. Show yourself.
Price peers around a cabinet, gripping Ben's rifle. He turns at the sound, but there's no one there. The doctor continues walking down the central aisle of the room, weapon raised. He lunges around a cabinet, but the area is empty. He dashes around another cabinet to find an empty floor covered with plaster dust.
Your anger will never defeat us.
Sarah's body is flung into a cabinet. Other cabinets smash into the wall, then one crashes down on Price. Ben slams Sarah back, gripping her throat. Price crawls out from under the furniture, and Ben turns his shiny, ruptured face his direction. Price aims the rifle. Ben turns to Sarah.
You took everything from me!
Only visible to Price, Ben slams the woman back again, the bullets hitting the cabinet behind him. Sarah drops to the ground.
They're going right through him.
You saw him?
Yes.
In the basement, mother and son peer into the shadows. A ghoulish figure rises up in a soldier's uniform, unseen. Another face appears, eyes white. To Marion and Henry, the room still looks empty.
Who's there?
In the rifle room.
You're there. You are there, amongst the dead. It's not the gun. He's afraid of something else.
Price pulls the bullet from his vest pocket and looks at the engraving on it, reading, "Together Forever." A flashback shows the library.
You kept it and refurbished it.
Well, because it's a reminder of my past.
Instruments of death have a powerful connection to the afterlife.
Back in the present.
One should have killed him. Saved him.
He slides the bullet into the rifle's chamber. He turns and aims, but sees nothing but moonlight streaming in a window.
Ben, we can help you be free of your torment.
In the basement, Marion and Henry grip each other tightly.
I'm a mother.
A specter in uniform nears, a label on his shirt reading J.E. Block. Marion spins the lamp, seeing nothing.
A fighter.
Ben's brothers draw closer. In the rifle room.
Show yourself.
Marion stands in front of her son.
A protector.
And I am not afraid.
The soldiers step nearer. In the rifle room, all the weapons that fell from their cases begin to tremble on the floor. A view rises up as the guns float from the ground, Ben standing behind them all. Price, eyes wide, watches the firearms drift up, all pointed toward him and Sarah. Sarah's mouth hangs open. Ben snags one of the guns and grips it with both hands. As Price takes aim, Ben pulls the burlap sack over his head. He disappears from view. Price spins, glancing uncertainly back and forth at all the floating rifles. In the basement, Marion glares into the darkness. The brothers step closer to her, one reaching a hand out toward her throat. In the rifle room, dozens of weapons hover in the air. Price closes his eyes.
See the truth.
He reopens them, and Ben appears, cocking his weapon. Price crouches and fires. He blasts the burlap sack, and Ben drops. The sack hits the ground empty, and all the guns fall to the floor. In the basement, the soldier reaching for Marion curls his fingers and withdraws his hand. Back in the rifle room, the doctor lowers his weapon. Sarah turns to him.
Yes.
Price sees Ben lying lifelessly on the floor, no longer looking ghoulish. They step over and she guides the doctor's hand down to rest on Ben's chest, though she can't see the body.
He's at peace. He's joined his brothers. You've done it. They're gone.
She gazes around the room.
Everybody else, go back to your rooms. All of you.
A view shows debris-filled moonlit chambers, corridors, and staircases of the mansion. All is still. In the hallway, where all the rooms were barricaded, the open doors now swing closed, one by one. Now, Price helps Sarah out the front door and into the light of dawn, where Marion and her son sit in the grass across from the house. Mother and son jump to their feet. Sarah hugs the boy, then draws Marion into the embrace. Later, Price writes a letter.
Dear Mr. Gates, below you will find my psychological assessment and mental status examination of Mrs. Sarah Lockwood Winchester. It was conducted at her home between the dates of April 12 to April 19, 1906, and prepared at the request of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company. In my professional opinion, after having observed Mrs. Winchester for the past week, it is my conclusion that she is of sound mind and body and is fit to continue in her role with the Winchester Repeating Arms Company for as long as she desires such a burden.
On a balcony, Sarah gazes at the photo of Annie and kisses the lock of hair.
Yours truly, Dr. Eric A. Price.
She releases the strands of hair into the wind, letting the breeze take them away. Now, workmen reseal all the doors in the spirit hallway. Dr. Price steps somberly into the mansion's garden room and glances around at the neglected, barren plants.
It's time for us both to leave this house.
A gentle, wistful smile plays across his lips.
I'll always miss you.
He turns and walks out. Outside, workmen clear debris, lower rifle crates to the ground, and dismantle the garden room. On the front porch, Price stands with Marion and Henry.
Thank you, Dr. Price, for your help.
Oh, man.
He shakes the red-headed boy's hand, then turns to his mother.
Thank you.
She kisses his cheek. He heads toward a waiting carriage. Nearby, Sarah, her veil pulled back, stares grimly toward her house. Dr. Price strides over to her.
Time for me to say goodbye.
She tilts her head and looks in his eyes, then gazes down, grasping his left hand and drawing it toward her. She closes her eyes, then looks up at him again.
Ruby loves you. That did not stop after her death. You know that, don't you?
He nods.
I do.
She nods back, smiling warmly.
You know, in spite of everything, you really do have a beautiful home. What are you going to do next?
Rebuild, of course.
She glances at him knowingly.
Of course.
They gaze at the badly damaged, sprawling mansion. Walls have gaping holes in them. Shingles are missing. Windows are shattered, and a chimney has collapsed. Now, a view shows a room full of spare windows of assorted shapes and sizes. Another view glides through a gleaming, restored corridor, then down the spirit hallway, where all the doors are again barricaded with carefully crafted wooden braces. A nail pushes its way out of the wood. It lands among other nails. Cut to black. Text appears. The 1906 San Francisco earthquake was the most destructive and deadly earthquake in American history. Sarah Winchester continued to build her house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, up until her death in 1922. The Winchester House remains one of the most haunted mansions in North America. A black and white photo shows the real-life Sarah Winchester sitting in the back of a carriage. Directed by the Spierig Brothers. Written by Tom Vaughn and the Spierig Brothers. Produced by Tim McGahan. Produced by Brett Tomberlin. Executive Producers, Benedict Carver, Daniel Diamond. Executive Producer, Tobin Armbrust. Executive Producers, Andy Trapani, Brian Gilbert. Executive Producers, Michael Burton, Bryce Menzies, Mark Shipper, Simon Oakes, and Tony Elianos. Director of Photography, Ben Knott, ACS. Production Designer, Matthew Putland. Film Editor, Matt Villa, ASE. Costume Designer, Wendy Cork. Special Makeup Effects Designer, Steve Boyle. Music by Peter Spierig. Casting by Maura Faye Casting, Leigh Pickford, Helen Mirren, Jason Clark, Sarah Snook. CBS Films presents, in association with Eclipse Pictures, a Screen Australia presentation. In association with Screen Queensland and Film Victoria, a Black Lab Entertainment production, an Imagination Design Works production, a film by the Spierig Brothers. Winchester. More credits roll. Cast, in order of appearance, Helen Mirren as Sarah Winchester, Sarah Snook as Marion Marriott, Finn Sikluna Oprey as Henry Marriott, Jason Clark as Dr. Eric Price, M. Wiseman as Nancy, Alana Fagan as Partially Dressed Lady Number 1, Rebecca Makar as Partially Dressed Lady Number 2, Tyler Coppin as Arthur Gates, Michael Carmen as Frank. Angus Sampson as John Hansen. Alice Chaston as Clara. Eamon Farron as Ben Block. Laura Brent as Ruby Price. Adam Bowes as Farmer Amputee. Bruce Spence as Augustine. Phoenix Saru DeMarco as Native American Child. Jaden Irving as Carpenter Number 1. Roscoe Campbell as Carpenter Number 2. Hooven Pather as Carpenter Number 3. Tom Heath as Wiry Carpenter. Curtis Bach as Harry Block. Andy Delore as James Block. Graham John as Innocent Man Number 1. Hayden Stewart as Innocent Man Number 2. Chris Anderson as Innocent Man Number 3. Laura Sutton as Innocent Woman. Robert Shook as Police Officer Number 1. Richard Anastasios as Police Officer Number 2. Will Jones as Police Officer Number 3. Luke David Mazey as Police Officer Number 4. James Baldwin as Police Officer Number 5. Neil Salomano as Police Officer Number 6. Amos Sisa as Slave Ghost, Red Horse Rivera as Chief Little Fawn, Timothy Brown as Ghost Number 1, Kim Lannon as Ghost Number 2, Farmer, Christian Rhodes Wolf as Ghost Number 3, Union Soldier, Albert Trastman as Ghost Number 4, Sheriff, Xavier Gerard Ludovich Gowalt as Ghost Number 5, Police Officer, Gawi Deng as Ghost Number 6, Confederate Soldier, Ryuhei Sakamoto as Ghost Number 7, Rail Worker, Shane Holloway as Ghost Number 8, Cowboy, Michael Boyd as Ghost Number 9, Sheriff, Elisa Abascal as Ghost Number 10, Mexican Woman, Akosua Sabet as Ghost Number 11, Cotton Picker, Stephanie Beal as Ghost Number 12, 1895 Wealthy Lady, Clancy Fraser as Ghost Number 13, Prostitute, Chris Homa as Ghost Number 14, Farmer's Wife, Rose Wan as Ghost Number 15, Maid, Stunt Coordinator Chris Anderson, Assistant Stunt Coordinator Pooven Pather, Head Stunt Rigger Grant Fletcher, Stunt Rigger Warwick Sadler, Stunt Assistants Lincoln Barros, Mike Snow, Sherelle Starr, Additional Stunt Supervisor Jimmy Christensen, Additional Stunt Assistants Richard Anastasios, Philly Anderson, Chris Pace, Stunt Performers Richard Anastasios, Chris Anderson, Philly Anderson, Roscoe Campbell, Adam Howell, Jaden Irving, Graham John, Will Jones, Dave Mondin, Chris Pace, Pooven Pather, Robert Shook, Hayden Stewart, Laura Sutton, Animal Wranglers, Cody Rawson Harris, Gavin Robson, Sarah Standin, Jillian Samuel, Eric Standin, Gregory Ledoux, Standins, Peter G. Lucas, Joe Payton, Tanya Rich, Crew, Line Producer, Yvonne Collins, Production Manager, Angelique Badenoch, First Assistant Director, Jamie Leslie, Art Director, Janie Parker, Additional Editing by Jeff Bantencourt, Second Assistant Director, Angela McPherson, Script Supervisor, Carmel Torcasio, Production Coordinator, Christine Hutchins, Assistant Production Coordinator, Hilton Shaw, Production Secretary, Richard Helder, Producer's Assistant, Mel Sawyer, Production Assistant, Claire Hollins, Additional Production Manager, Taneka Williams, Additional Production Assistant, Jean Corser, Production Runner, Georgia Monroe, Director's Assistant, Beck Peniston Bird, Miss Mirren's Assistant, Ella Barton, Miss Mirren's Driver, Hans Van Buge, Mr. Clark's Driver, Phil Watt. CBS Films has not received any compensation or other consideration or entered into any agreement relating to the appearance of any tobacco products in this picture. Copyright 2018, Winchester Film Holdings Proprietary Limited, Eclipse Pictures Incorporated, Screen Australia, and Screen Queensland Proprietary Limited, all rights reserved. By watching this film legally, you have supported hundreds of jobs of creatives, distributors, and crew as listed above. Ownership of this motion picture is protected under the laws of Australia and all other countries throughout the world. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this film or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film is inspired by a true story. The characters, incidents, and locations portrayed and the names herein may have been slightly altered. This film has been described by Deluxe with funding by Lionsgate Films, Inc., voiced by William Michael Redman.